All right, welcome in. It's First and Ten, the podcast. Here on the Saturday Down South Podcast Network, I'm Matt Hayes. We're coming at you for the next 45 or so minutes. We're going to break down all things SEC. We got a great show on the way. We're going to talk to LSU quarterback Danny Etling. We're going to get into the big weekend for Butch Jones. If Butch doesn't win this weekend at home against South Carolina, he's not going to make it to Monday, people. It's just not going to happen. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about this perception out there that the SEC is three elite teams and no one else. And my response to that basically is, oh yeah? What about the rest of the Power Four? Power Five, the other four conferences? What is their elite? And what's the rest of their conferences look like? We'll get into that. Talk about a lot more. We'll get into the five picks of the week. But we're going to start it off with LSU quarterback Danny Etling. Big game last week. Big win against Florida. Now another huge one this weekend at home against Auburn. Okay, before we get going here, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, Bud Light. The Bud Light Tailgate Tour is hitting several incredible locations this season. And the next stop is this week in Tuscaloosa for Alabama or Arkansas. The Bud Light Tailgate Party is taking place at the top of the strip. And you can look for the entrance off Red Drew Avenue on the corner of 6th Street. The event starts at 11 a.m. Head on over anytime between 11 a.m. and kickoff. And the first 100 guests receive a complimentary Bud Light souvenir cup in those beautiful Alabama crimson colors. Bud Light is the proud supporter of the Crimson Tide. And remember, everyone, you must be 21 to get in the door and drink a little Bud Light. Yeah, they will be checking IDs. You can bet on that. Okay, let's bring on LSU quarterback Danny Etling. Led a big victory last week in Gainesville, and there's no relief in sight this week. Another big one at home against Auburn. Danny, how important was that to get a win, to get everybody simply feeling good about themselves again?
Yeah, it was huge. There's obviously a lot of pressure after last week, and a lot of stressful times that can come from losing a game, especially in the SEC. So we were happy to go on the road and get a big win for Coach and for the whole team, despite, you know, having a lot of injuries and some things that adversity we had to overcome during that game. So we were really pumped to have that, and hopefully we can carry those momentum into next week.
Is it, Danny, is it as simple as that, really? I've heard a lot of players tell me that, you know, once you just get a win, the mindset not only changes with the players, but it's like the collective mindset of the team and the collective mindset of everybody within the organization. Everything changes. Is it really that simple?
Yeah, sometimes it really is. People always try to find the ailments of, you know, what's going wrong with the team, and sometimes it's just not being able to win a game, whether it's a close game that you just barely lose, or the ball just not bouncing your way sometimes and not making enough plays. So sometimes when you win a game, it just takes that, you know, the stress that's bearing down on you off your back, and you can kind of play a little looser.
Dan, you've been very vocal since you've been at LSU, and you guys had a players-only meeting last week, and I know a lot of times I've heard players have told me that that's really just a way to reset things. Did you speak up at that meeting, and what did you say to help reset it?
Yeah, a lot of the leaders kind of and the seniors all spoke up, and even some past players have come back this week and really put things into perspective for a lot of the young guys. But I just kind of was letting people know that you know, Coach O takes care of our bodies, and he does a great job with our practice schedule. But with that comes, you know, a lot of personal responsibility to make sure that we're prepared to play the games. And that comes by not just leaving football and forgetting about it and then coming back to practice. And that's the next time you think about your opponent or the next time you think about the game plan. So I challenged all the leaders in every room to have these extra meetings to go over the game plan and watch film with the young guys and get all these guys that are younger and who haven't played as much, don't have the experience to prepare for a game, and get them more prepared so that we're all on the same page and that we can all kind of learn together and grow together as a team throughout the year.
It's harder for those young guys. Like, when you lose, it's harder for them to bounce back, right? Because they have no experience there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't lose in high school. You know, if you're a pretty good player, and that's what you get to LSU is by being a good player, your team
right.
doesn't usually lose too much. So it's something that takes a lot of getting used to, and it takes being able to bounce back and still treating the next week with the same intensity, because, you know, it kind of takes the wind out of your sails a little bit when you lose a game.
And I think a lot of people don't realize just how young you guys are as well. I mean, you've got some young guys playing in some critical spots, and you know, Any loss can affect them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously tough, and there's a lot of just some learning that goes with having all these young guys playing. But obviously, we don't want to use that as an excuse. So we just want to continue to keep growing and keep kind of teaching everybody so that we can grow throughout the season. But yeah, it's a tough thing. A lot of things can be fickle in football, and losing is one of them that can really affect the team.
Yeah, fickle. You're not kidding, man. Like social media, and I mean, how hard is it to see your coach going through tough times outside the complex? You know, people call him for his job. Do you guys as players see that as a reflection of the way you're playing?
Yeah, you can, but as I'm sure you guys know, SEC fans don't let the players off the hook too much either. So I'm sure that I know I personally hear plenty of it, and you try and stay away from it as much as you can. I stay away from social media just because I know the truth is within the operations building and with the coaches and the other players. So that's the only people I think that we worry about and that we should worry about. So that's something that we've always kind of made a point to do. And I personally made a point to do because I know how tough it can be, especially after a loss. You know, you kind of find out who's with you and who isn't.
How do you insulate yourself from that, Dane? I mean, you get it everywhere. It's not only social media. I'm sure when you're driving your car, you turn on the radio, you're getting it there too. How do you insulate yourself from that and stay focused on, all right, let's just do what we have to do?
I don't really have too much social media, and you know, I just kind of I don't look at it at all. I don't really worry myself with it. I'm not really too much in the age of social media and don't find it too necessary. And then obviously when you're riding on the radio, maybe you just turn on like some tunes or something instead of talk radio so you don't have to hear that. And you just focus on doing your job and preparing for the team because, you know, there's such a little time between week to week to prepare to play another opponent. So you can't really focus yourself on any negatives or anything like that.
All right, let's get into ball, man. How important has Matt Canada been for you this season in terms of allowing you the ability to stretch the field with some throws and putting you in position to have consistent success?
He's been awesome. Coach Canada's done a great job of really teaching me kind of to take the next step in my game of getting the ball out on time, having better feet, really helped me after my injury to figure out what footwork I needed to be doing to get healthy again and to be better. And I've had a lot of offensive coordinators now in football, so Coach Canada, I think, has done a great job, just like all the other ones I have, of helping me take the next step in my game. I felt like I came into college pretty raw, and he actually recruited me out of high school, and I'm sure he thought the same thing. But every single coach I've had has kind of tried to take me to that next level, and I think that Coach Canada is really trying to take me to the final step of my college career and get me to that next level where hopefully I can take the next step as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. So he recruited you out of high school. Where was he when he was recruiting you?
Wisconsin. He offered me a scholarship.
Oh, right, right.
But then Bielma left, and that's kind of how things went.
Okay, so last week I thought that game plan against Florida was fantastic. I mean, it literally took them three quarters to catch up with that jet sweep option you guys were doing. And by that time, you know, you guys got on a little bit of a roll. You started feeling good. Is that kind of what Matt brings to the table as the OC?
Yeah, he's really creative. I mean, I think you can even see some guys in the NFL are starting to kind of emulate that offense and emulate some of the running game things that he's done that really make it stressful for a defense. So I thought he put together a tremendous game plan against Florida. I thought all the guys executed it great. You know, we had to overcome some injuries and some key spots and some guys getting ejected that, you know, we were hoping to play a big role. So unfortunately that kind of put a hamper on some of the things as well. But in the end, I thought we really ended up executing the game plan to perfection. And we did what we could with, you know, all the adversity we faced to go out and win the game. And that's a testament to Coach Canada and everyone else on the coaching staff.
Now, Danny, that Auburn defense looks nasty. I'm sure you've watched the tape. They can rush the passer, they can stuff the run, a difficult challenge. But, you know, when you have a win like that last week and when you guys start to feel good, does that allow guys to play more freely, play with more confidence? Does it change, like, the dynamics of the offense, you think?
Yeah, I think it really helps just with confidence and guys trusting and seeing, hey, you know, things are working and we're going to get things right, even, you know, despite the injuries and despite the adversity that we had to overcome, that, hey, we can still do this, we can still get a win, whether it's pretty, whether it's ugly, you know, a win is a win. But, yeah, we got a great test this week. Auburn is a tremendous defense and a tremendous team as a whole. So we have a lot of respect for them and what they do. And Coach Steele does a great job of coaching them up. So we'll have our hands full, and we'll really respect them as an opponent and make sure that we prepare hard.
Now, Danny, you guys still have your goals in front of you. You can still win the West. You can still win the East. I mean, the SEC championship. I mean, I think when you look at that, have you ever been in a situation as an athlete, you know, even high school or wherever, where one game kind of turned it for everybody, like maybe last week could do for you this year?
Yeah, probably when I was a lot younger. I was a lot younger, probably playing basketball, and in high school, we won a game, and everyone kind of got pumped up about it. And, things kind of turned, and we started having a little bit better of a season. So, mostly in basketball, that's been it for me. For football, this will be a first, so I'm hoping to make that a thing and hopefully control our own destiny.
Are you any good at basketball?
I thought I was really good, but I'm sure other people would mistake me. But I have a really good jump shot, and I can play some defense too.
So you're not a chucker. You can shoot it.
Oh, yeah, of course. I can shoot it, dribble a little bit. I'm a two-guard, so that helps.
All right, one last question, man. You've been here now for a year and a half in the SEC in this journey. How difficult is it to play in this league compared to the Big Ten? And what struck you as the most difficult part of playing here as compared to playing there?
It's just extremely physical, I think, was the first thing I noticed, that and the speed of the game. I was on scout team for like a year. With Coach Steele, actually, ironically, and I got to just play against our first team defense like week in and week out, and that's when I first realized how much faster the game is. You know, I played Ohio State at Purdue, and that was, you know, equivalent to the same speed and the defense that I saw, you know, with our team here. And then week in and week out, you feel the physicality of the game, and it's a bruising game, and it takes a little bit of time to get to feel yourself again after a week of playing, and you take a lot of big hits and a lot of big plays being made. So that and the environment of the fans is something else that's just a little bit different. You know, in the Midwest, there's a little bit more laid back attitude and different weather and everything like that. But the stadiums here are like cathedrals. It's, you know, you go into an opposing team stadium and it's live, it's loud, it's a great atmosphere. And it's kind of what you grow up imagining what college football would be like. So I'm thankful for my time in the SEC, and I'm hoping to make it last even a little bit longer here.
Fantastic. It's going to be loud and live this weekend at Tiger Stadium, no doubt about that. Danny, thanks so much for your time. Good luck this week, all right?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Thank you.
I'm telling you now, I've seen this before. Teams that have a chemistry problem of sorts, not playing up to their potential, elite players not playing at an elite status, guys that might could play through injuries, don't feel like playing through injuries, and then suddenly you get a big win against a rival and everything clicks. And that could very well be the situation right now at LSU. A huge game this weekend against Auburn, one of the elite three right now in the SEC, Alabama, Auburn, and Georgia. We'll get into that a little bit later. One of the elite three in the league, at home, Tiger Stadium. This is where LSU can make a statement right now. This is where the first 5 weeks of the season and all that drama with Ed Orgeron and all that drama with the athletic director Joe Oliva and all that drama about the $12 million buyout for a coach who's five games into his first season as a head coach there. All that goes away, you beat Auburn. It all goes away. All right, that's a perfect segue into our first subject today on the First and 10 podcast on the Saturday Down South podcast network. The elite teams in the SEC. You know, there's this narrative going around that the SEC's top heavy. It's three teams and that's it. You know, there are three teams ranked in the current polls right now for, you know, what those polls are worth. Polls, of course, has been shown over and over mean absolutely nothing. But there's Alabama, there's Georgia, and there's Auburn. And now you see everyone making this argument that the SEC is down because it's only those three teams being ranked. So I'm going to try and like expose that fundamentally flawed argument, if you will, okay? I'm going to break down the Power Five conferences, all right? Starting with the SEC, we're going to talk about the elite of each conference and a team or teams still trying to figure out and trying to get that elite status. You're looking at the SEC. I got Alabama and Georgia as elite. I think they are there. They are clearly among the top four teams in college football right now. I think you got Auburn still trying to figure it out. Auburn really hasn't beaten anyone right now. They played really well against Clemson. Other than that, what has Auburn done? Big week for Auburn, I think, this week against LSU. Going on the road in that tough environment. Going to be a statement for them, one way or the other. Same with LSU. I still believe LSU, with that kind of talent and that team, can put it all together. And if they can, I think they can put themselves in position where November rolls around, and if somehow they upset Alabama, and they beat Auburn this weekend, I should say, and then they've somehow upset Alabama, you know, then they're in the driver's seat. They still control their destiny, as crazy as that sounds. All right, let's move on to the Big Ten, okay? Now, remember, the narrative is there's only three teams right now in the SEC. The Big Ten has Penn State. Right now, if you're looking at that conference right now, you see Penn State and you think, yeah, I think Penn State right now looks like an elite team. Now, I'm not saying Penn State's played anyone yet to prove that point. I think they had a very nice win at Iowa, a tough game. They gutted it out, won on the last play of the game. Impressive, okay? Very, very impressive. Night game at Kinnick Stadium. Very tough win. Other than that, what has Penn State done? So now this is all eye test. Because once you get down to the team still trying to figure it out, you got Ohio State there. And Ohio State lost at home by 15 to Oklahoma. Other than that, Ohio State has played no one. Wisconsin has played no one. Look at Wisconsin, okay? They've played no team of significance and will not play someone till middle of November. They don't play Penn State in the regular season. They don't play Ohio State. They don't play Michigan State. And their next four games, are you ready for this? Purdue, Maryland, Illinois, Indiana. I mean, come on. And the argument now is going to be made that Wisconsin is elite. Because why? Because the eye test. Because that's all you've got right now in the Big Ten. Because you think Ohio State's elite, but they haven't shown it in a big game. Then there's Michigan and Michigan State. That Michigan offense with Wilton Spate or John O'Korn as your quarterback. Come on. And then Michigan State. Michigan State's lone flag in the sand is beating Michigan, which literally can't string together first downs. Michigan State lost at home by 20 to Notre Dame, the team that Georgia went to South Bend and beat with a freshman quarterback playing in his first big game. Let's start to reassess these a little more, everyone, okay? So when you hear your buddies or you hear people talk about how the SEC's only three teams, what about the rest of the Power Four conferences? What about the Pac-12? Look, I love Washington State and what they've done now, midway through the season. You got a great win over USC at home. You got a dominant performance at Oregon. I know it's not the Oregon of, you know, the 2010, 2008, 9, 10, 11. It's not that Oregon. But they're still a pretty darn good team with a pretty darn good offense. And Mike Leach's just revitalized defense held them to 10 points in Eugene. I'm telling you right now, Mike Leach has a team that looks a lot like that 2008 Texas Tech team that came within, you know, who knows what, you know, an idea of, okay, let's go with Oklahoma instead of Texas and Texas Tech from representing the South Division in that Big 12 championship game. Then winning that game, then playing in the BCS National Championship game. It's a very, very good team right now, the Washington State. Washington has played no one. And I think Washington's probably the next close to being elite. Washington's non-conference schedule is brutal. Will probably be the worst of any of these so-called elite teams vying for a playoff spot in November. USC, you have literally no idea week to week what kind of team you're getting from USC. The offense is wildly inconsistent. The defense looks strong, but like most defenses right now in college football, if these 70, 80, 90 play offenses get bogged down and go three and out, and you put that defense back on the field, they get tired, and they get tired quick. You go to the ACC, there's Clemson, clearly an elite team. Again, I've said this now. For weeks, Alabama and Clemson are ahead of everyone else. And I think Georgia actually now is closing in on Alabama and Clemson. It's getting that close. But right now, Alabama and Clemson are the elite of college football. Who else in the ACC makes you think, yeah, that's a team that could play in the college football playoff? Miami? Miami beat a Florida State team without its starting quarterback and a Florida State team that, frankly, is a mess, an absolute mess. Virginia Tech got thumped at home by Clemson. Needed a couple iffy calls to beat West Virginia. I'm not seeing anybody else in the ACC. And please don't give me Georgia Tech. Don't start saying Georgia Tech at 4-1 because I'm going to come right back with that team lost to Tennessee and Butch Jones. So don't even give me Georgia Tech. The Big 12's got TCU. Before last week, I would have said Oklahoma, despite the fact they've been shaky on defense. Oklahoma's got a very good chance to get there. TCU's going to lose. There will be a one-loss champion in the Big 12, and that's going to hurt them in the end when November rolls around the final voting. That is going to hurt the Big 12. So when you hear this nonsense about, well, the SEC is only a three-team league, and there's only three teams in the SEC. Once you get past these other teams that I've mentioned from the other conferences, there's no difference from them and the SEC and the rest of those conferences. None. So then your argument is, all right, well, the SEC has three potential elite teams, two definite, one-third. Who else in college football has that? No one. Absolutely no one. And this, of course, leads us to the crux of the problem of that argument that the SEC is only three teams. The problem is the SEC is judged by the bar that it has set for itself for the previous decade. You don't win championships like they have. You don't dominate over the course of seasons, plural, like they have. And then just get to shut it off in a specific year. And then just get to say, well, there's only three teams. And we may not be as good at 4 through 14, but 1 through 3, woo! You don't get to do that. You don't. So whether you are still strong at 4 through 14, it certainly doesn't look that way. It doesn't help that Butch Jones right now is in a situation at Tennessee where if he can't beat South Carolina this weekend at home, he's not going to make it to Monday, folks. It's not going to happen. He will get fired by the time Monday rolls around. It doesn't help that Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M is quite literally in a situation where he's coaching for his job every single game. This weekend against Florida in Gainesville, Texas A&M, for the sake of Kevin Sumlin's job, cannot lose that game. They absolutely cannot lose that game. That's a Florida team that can't score points. That's a Florida team that has not been good on offense for 9 years, 8 or 9 years. It's an Aggies team that should feel pretty good about itself by the way it played Alabama last week in College Station. You got to go in there and win that game if you're Texas A&M. You have to. It's not even a question. You got a quarterback with little confidence right now at Florida. You got an offense that struggles to throw the ball. If you're Texas A&M, you got to go in there and win that game. You know, the thing is, I've said this all along about Kevin Sumlin way back in July when Scott Weber went on Paul Feinbaum's show and talked about how there's a certain number of games that Kevin Sumlin has to win. I don't think it's the number. I think it's the actual teams he's got to beat. To me, I've said there's three games that will dictate his ability to keep his job: Alabama, Auburn, and LSU. And from the beginning of the season, I said he's got to win two of those three. So now he's already lost to Alabama. Auburn and LSU are still on the schedule. Can he win those two and get to 8 or 9 wins? If he wins those two and gets to 8 or 9, yeah, I think he's going to keep his job. If he wins those two, he might get to 10 wins. That might be enough to galvanize that team like we spoke about earlier with LSU and maybe how that win in Gainesville galvanized that talented team that was wayward for the first 5 games of the season. You're dealing, everyone, with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. And emotion and motivation play such a critical role and how these guys deal and how they prepare and how they execute week after week after week. You'd be shocked at what one game, one win, one big play will do for the confidence, the psyche of players. When they start playing with confidence, when the team starts playing with confidence, everything can change. All right, let's move on to the weekly five. Five picks against the spread. That's right. Not no 50-50 coin flip here, people. Against the spread. The tough way. 4-1 last week. Not a bad week for me. It's really 3-2, but I'm going 4-1 because over the last 3 days of the LSU-Florida line went from actually Florida favored by 2.5 to Florida as a 1.5 underdog. And I took Florida when they were favored, so I get them when they're the dog. And those 1.5 points, yep, gives me the win. So I'm taking that 4-1, 16-14 for the season. 53%, not bad. Not good. We're getting right back on it again this week with five tough games to pick. All right, we're going to start off in Starkville, BYU at Mississippi State. And this is a game that's a must for the Mississippi State program right now. I began the season saying there were two sleeper teams that I really liked in each division. In the West, it was Mississippi State. In the East, it was South Carolina. And right now, Mississippi State struggling, absolutely struggling. And by the way, for those of you out there who think that offense is the new defense in college football and the key to winning a championship, let me give you a little peek into Nick Fitzgerald over the last 2 weeks, okay? 3 weeks to begin the season. 3 weeks into the season, Fitzgerald was putting up big numbers. And the offseason plan of making him more of a thrower, more of an accurate, consistent thrower, was clearly paying off. All right? In 3 games against Charleston, Southern Louisiana Tech, and LSU, he had 7 touchdowns, 1 interception, was completing 61% of his passes, and had a passer efficiency rating of 156.7. Now, fast forward, last 2 games against Georgia and against Auburn. 2 teams that, yeah, can play a little D, okay? Nick Fitzgerald in those games. 240 yards passing, 1 touchdown, 4 interceptions, 44% passes completed. You ready for this? This pass efficiency rating? He went from 156.7 in the first 3 games to 68.4 against Georgia and Auburn. That's why defense still rules the way right now in college football. If you can play defense, you are going to win a lot of games. And if you can play defense and score some points like Clemson and Alabama can, like Georgia can, like Penn State can, yeah. And really like Wazoo can. Washington State, I'll tell you what, that was impressive what they did at Oregon defensively. You can play defense and you can score points, you're going to win championships. Championships. All right, so back to the BYU at Mississippi State game. BYU is just absolutely awful this year. Horrible. 0 consistency on offense. Can't stop anybody on defense. They're getting 21.5 at Mississippi State. This is a big game for not only Mississippi State, but for Nick Fitzgerald, and I think he's going to bounce back. I think he's going to play really well. But you know what? I'm still taking those 21.5, and I'm taking BYU. I'm saying Mississippi State's going to win the game, but they're not going to cover. That's not going to happen. All right, game two. I'm saving the best for last, by the way. Arkansas at Alabama. The Tide are giving 30 points to Arkansas. 30. And we talked at length last week about Brett Bielema and how the numbers just don't add up. They're not playing well. He's not winning SEC games. He's not winning SEC games of significance. And I know that Jeff Long loves Brett Bielema, loves how he's changed the culture there, how it's important for those kids to go to class, and to do the right thing for the first time in a long time. But I'll tell you what, at some point you've got to win games. And right now, Arkansas is struggling. Struggling. South Carolina got 3 defensive touchdowns last week against Arkansas. 3. You just can't have that happen. You absolutely can't. You got a guy who's in his second year as a starting quarterback. Problems like that can't happen on offense. Arkansas is getting 30. I'm laying that 30 all day long. And I'll tell you why. Because you don't get the best coach in college football to go to the podium after winning a game on the road in the SEC and start complaining about rat poison. The media's filling his team with rat poison because they're telling him how good they are. Wait and see how on point and how ready this Alabama team is this week against Arkansas. It's going to get ugly. Really ugly. In fact, I actually think if somebody would have said, you know what, Alabama's going to lay 38 points, I'd have said, all right, I'll lay it. I'm good. I'll take Alabama. They're going to play really, really well. And that's a bad sign for Brett Bielema, who now is just getting deeper and deeper in the mess. Because once he starts to lose that core group of supporters at Arkansas that truly believe in him, people like Jeff Long, once he starts to lose that fan base, he's in trouble. And a big loss to Alabama, not going to help that. Okay, let's move on to the 3 biggies now. The 3 big ones this week in the SEC. We're going to start in Gainesville. Texas A&M going to Gainesville. The line's at 3 right now. The Aggies getting 3. That's going to change. That will change by the end of the week. It might even be even by the end of the week. It's not going to matter, okay? Because we can talk all day about Florida's problems on offense and how Jim McElwain was hired to rebuild it and how it hasn't happened. We can talk about Doug Nussmeier not giving quarterbacks easy throws to gain confidence and momentum. I mean, easy throws. When was the last time you saw a Florida quarterback throw a slant or a curl or a simple dig route? I mean, you got this offense, they're running all kinds of these crazy combination routes with a redshirt freshman quarterback throwing the ball and an offensive line that still struggles in pass protection. And last week against LSU, without their two number one and number two receivers. And you're asking a redshirt freshman quarterback to be successful with combination routes? You can't do that. You got to give Felipe Franks the ability to have some success. You got to give him easy throws. Again, this goes back to what we were talking about at LSU and everywhere, really. You're talking about young guys that when they get success, when they feel success, the confidence grows. When the confidence grows, they play better. They play smarter. They play more focused. When you don't have confidence, when you don't have confidence in the plan or the scheme or the offensive line or the receivers to catch the ball, you don't play the same. You don't play with energy. You don't play with fire. You don't play with reckless abandon. It just doesn't happen. So if you're the Florida coordinator, offensive coordinator, why would you not give that kid some easy throws? A slant here. A curl there, a dig route, short crossing routes, something. Something other than a combination route where he's got to go an extra 1.5 seconds to not only wait to let the receivers finish the route, but number two, to throw it on timing to where it's got to be there and he's got to hope that his receiver has not been knocked off a route. A redshirt freshman quarterback. You can't do that. You cannot put guys in position to fail. You've got to put them in position to win. And that's not what's happened right now. And the reality is this, too, with Florida. We're going to get off on a little tangent here right now because it seems like we've been dealing with this now all season. Jim McElwain was 6-0 his first 6 games at Florida because Will Grier was a quarterback. He's 16-10 since. Now, Greer made the mistake. Took the banned supplement, suspended for a year. But then McIlwain compounded that mistake by not allowing Greer to return to the program. Now, he told me, look, I told Will you can come back, but I'm not guaranteeing you anything. Will Greer told me I never asked for anything, never asked for a guarantee. I just wanted to know what was going on. Clearly, there's conflicting stories. But this much is true, okay? By the end of their second meeting, both of them agreed that McIlwain said, look, maybe it's time, it's best, all things considered, if you just move on. Here is the bottom line with this situation. McIlwain chose Luke Del Rio over Will Greer. McIlwain believed he could win with Luke Del Rio in the SEC instead of Will Greer. Now, I've had some staffers at Florida tell me the reason why he felt that way and why he wasn't completely invested in Greer. And if you remember this, if you're a Florida fan, if you remember this, despite that 6-0 start, after every one of those wins, even after that fourth and forever throw against Tennessee, even after the way Greer played against Ole Miss, McIlwain never really praised him after those games, okay? Never really came out and said, boy, Will Greer had a terrific game. And when I spoke with Will Greer about this a year ago, he said the same things. Because I brought it up to him and he said, you know what? I thought the same thing. He never said anything positive about me publicly. He said, and Matt, frankly, he never said anything positive about me privately either. So I've had a couple Florida staffers also tell me that McIlwain didn't like the fact that Greer really wasn't a locker room presence. He really wasn't a guy that could galvanize the team that players wanted to be around. Okay? I've had a couple staffers tell me that Greer was more interested in being with his then-girlfriend, who's now his wife, than he was with his teammates. Now, I brought that up to Greer, and he laughed at it. He said, it's absolutely ridiculous. He told me over and over that if McIlwain had simply told him, yes, you can compete for the job, he would have stayed in Gainesville and competed for the job. Meanwhile, Florida's a mess at quarterback, and Will Greer in his first year starting at West Virginia, oh, by the way, 1,740 yards, 16 touchdowns. Yeah, he's pretty good. Florida is left with an offense that statistically is in the 100s of 130 FBS teams. Del Rio injured out for the season. And the offense, like I said, in shambles. So, long story short, yeah, I'm going to take Texas A&M there. I don't care if it ends up being Pick'em, whatever you want. I don't care. I don't care if Texas A&M ends up being the dog. I'm taking Texas A&M in that game. All right, let's move on to the two biggies now, okay? South Carolina, Tennessee is a biggie, baby. Oh, it is, for the exact reason that we spoke about earlier. If Butch can't get it done, can't beat South Carolina at home, and I'm telling you right now, that stadium's going to have a lot of empty seats. If those empty seats get even more empty in the third quarter, fourth quarter, and the Vols are losing badly, Butch will not make it to Monday. It will not happen. Now, you know, we've got a big move this week. Jarrett Garantano, the former five-star quarterback recruit who has struggled to pick things up in Knoxville, will start this weekend. He's a better fit for that offense. There's no doubt about that. You know, Butch likes to run that spread option zone read stuff, and he is certainly a better fit for that. Garantano is a willing runner. He's a dynamic runner. He can do things on the ground. And those type of quarterbacks have hurt South Carolina. Steven Johnson on that last third down play in the fourth quarter where South Carolina needed a stop to get the ball back and try and win the game. Steven Johnson ran 50-something yards in that play. Absolutely broke the back of South Carolina. So it's a smart move. If you're going all in, if all the chips are going to the middle of the table, you may as well go with Garantano. Why not? I mean, if I'm Muschamp and I know I've got a quarterback that can make a throw or two to put me in position to win the game like Jake Bentley can do, and I know I'm pretty good on defense and I can get a turnover or two, I am literally just going to sit there and wait for Tennessee to implode. Tennessee is laying 1.5 in that game. and I'm going to go against everything I believe, and I'm going to take the Vols. I'm going to lay that 1.5. I think Tennessee is going to get it done. But it'll just be a momentary lapse of good fortune for the Vols, because the following week, it's the third Saturday in October, and the big bad tide are coming down the tracks, baby, and it's not going to be pretty. All right, the fifth and final game, Auburn at LSU, and if there were college football gods shining down on this game, it'd be the night game on ESPN. Unfortunately, that's the A&M and Florida game slotted in there. Instead, this is a 3:30 game, CBS kick. Tigers getting 9 points. Nine. That's a lot of points. I love the Auburn defense. I think Jared Stidham now is beginning to develop in that offense. Auburn is starting to be a little bit smarter in the way they're using Jared Stidham. I think a perfect example is the average yards per attempt with Jared Stidham. All right, it's an important stat. It's a stat the NFL scouts just absolutely love, okay? Because it shows the ability of a quarterback and an offense to throw the ball downfield, all right? And a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was telling you the problem with the Auburn offense is they're in a phone booth and they're all bunched up and they don't get those receivers out of the numbers and they don't allow Stidham the ability to get the ball from the shotgun snap, look up, and have receivers finding spots in zones where Stidham can use that big arm and make those throws. Now, in the last four games, Auburn's kind of spread it out a little bit. Not as much as they should, but certainly enough to allow Stidham to breathe a little bit. His average yards per attempt has gone from a paltry 5.5 to now a number that's better than it was when he was at Baylor. He's over 11 now. That's a significant jump. Now, again, you know, I say this with a little bit of pause, because those numbers, that increase to over 11 average yards per attempt was against Mercer, Missouri, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. You could take the best players from those four teams, from Mercer, Missouri, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss, and LSU still might have a better defense. Okay? So this is a different level right now for Jared Stidham. A much better defense. The toughest environment he will have played in anywhere, Auburn or Baylor, will be Tiger Stadium. That place is going to be electric. They'll be excited again because they beat Florida. They'll be feeling it again. The LSU players will be jacked because of the crowd and the experience. They'll feed off it. That's a tough spot for Auburn. And if LSU gets a score early, or they get a turnover early, or they get Auburn starting to think about what they're doing, that game can change quickly. That's 9 points. 9 points LSU is getting. At home. Imagine that. Imagine LSU under Les Miles or under Nick Saban getting 9 points at home. It just doesn't happen. To me, that's a red flag. That is a big red flag blowing in the wind. And I'm taking those 9 points. You better believe I'm taking them. Look, I'm not saying LSU is going to win the game. But you give me 9 points. Yeah, I'll take those nine. Auburn's not covering that nine. Not happening. All right, to recap. The five picks, I'm taking BYU in 21.5. I think Mississippi State's going to win the game. Not going to cover. I'm taking Alabama, giving 30 at home. I'm taking LSU in 9, the home dog. I'm giving 1.5 to South Carolina and taking Tennessee against my best judgment. I'm taking Texas A&M in 3, and again, by the end of the week, I mean, that thing could very easily be even. Very easily. 4-1 last week. 16-14 for this season. Got a good feeling about this week. That's five tough games right there. Tough games. All right, we're going to wrap up the podcast with something I've been talking about pretty much all season right now. And that's the fact that there's a possibility the SEC is going to get two teams in the college football playoff. And the more I watch things play out this year, the more we see these teams on the field playing, and the eye test starts to get involved, and you start to see, wait a second, maybe these guys aren't as good as we think they are. I think the Big 12 champion's going to have a loss. I think the Pac-12 champion's going to have a loss. And I think the Big 10 champion's going to have a loss. So then you're looking at unbeaten SEC, unbeaten ACC, and we know who those two are. It's either going to be Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson. And then you've got two spots for everyone else. And this whole idea about, oh, it's conference championships, that's the key. You got to be a conference champion. That went out the window last year. Gone. This whole idea that you got to win your conference, that it's not the four best teams, it's the four most deserving teams. Yeah. Out the window. With last year. With Ohio State that couldn't even win its division, getting a spot among the Final Four. Penn State sitting at home after winning the Big Ten, after beating Ohio State head-to-head. And this isn't the first time this has happened with Ohio State. The very first year of the college football playoff, we sat around for 6 weeks while the selection committee played semantics with Baylor and TCU. Baylor won head-to-head against TCU. I was at the game, covered it. Baylor won the game despite what the selection committee wanted to tell you for the first 6 weeks. The committee had TCU over Baylor. They weren't worried about head-to-head. They kept saying conference championships mean something. And because the Big 12 was too stupid to come out and say, look, if Baylor and TCU end up with the same record, in other words, they each have one loss, at the end of the season, Baylor will be our conference champion because Baylor won head-to-head. Instead, the Big 12 tried to have their cake and eat it too. And say, you know what? We might have co-champions. The Big 12 was thinking, what if we could get two teams in? Meanwhile, here's Ohio State. Lost at home to Virginia Tech by 2 touchdowns. Ohio State had the worst loss of those 3 teams. Okay? They had the worst strength of schedule of those 3 teams. TCU, Baylor, and Ohio State. And at the end of the year, they got in the number 4 spot. Ahead of Baylor and ahead of TCU. Because we were told Ohio State was a conference champion and the playoff committee had no flipping idea what Baylor or TCU were. Now let's fast forward to 2 years. 2 years later, here's Ohio State. And guess what? They don't win their division, they don't win their championship, but they're in the college football playoff. The first time they bent over to get Ohio State in the playoff, worked out, won the national championship. Second time, Buckeyes didn't score a point. The college football playoff has opened the door for this, okay? Once you open the door, and once you start talking out of both sides of the argument, it has to be conference champions, doesn't have to be conference champions. Once you allow that, you allow the idea then of 2 teams from one conference making the Final Four. And if things play out how we think they're going to play out, and both Alabama and Georgia are unbeaten when the first college football poll comes out, they'll either be 1, they'll probably be 1-3. Clemson might be 1, so they could be 2-3. And if they keep winning, and they're 2-3 the whole way, and they're both 12-0 when they play in that SEC championship game, and there's 3 unbeatens, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia. Or, you know, what if Clemson loses and you've got Alabama and Georgia at 1-2, unbeaten? They go into that SEC championship game. They play a great game. One of the 2 wins. Are you really going to get rid of the other one? Because Georgia's got a pretty good non-conference win at Notre Dame. And I don't think Notre Dame's losing again. Alabama, yeah, pretty good non-conference win against Florida State, a healthy Florida State. Who are you going to get rid of? Who are you going to say, if everyone else has one loss of the conference champions, who are you going to say the rest of those conference champions are going to be better than Alabama or Georgia, a one loss of Alabama or Georgia? That's going to be a very, very tough call for the selection committee. And there's no way around, because they're on record. They're on record of having it both ways. You suddenly can't come out if that happens and say, you know what? Alabama or Georgia, they didn't make it because they weren't conference champions. You can't do it because you opened the door last year. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. A lot of good games this weekend. Stay strong, everybody. Remember, like the podcast, subscribe to it on the Saturday Down South Podcast Network. Until next week, everyone, enjoy the games. We'll get back after it again.